I was like, I have to get to Cuba before that changes, because it's going to change the whole thing, the whole, like, you know, culture. They're going to open the embargo and it's going to become Americanized and touristy, and I want to see that before it changes. And I was like, Dad, I'm going to Cuba. I'm driving my bus down to Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico, and I'm going to go find a sailboat to Cuba. He's like, you're crazy, but that's okay. Right on. Go for it. You can't, like, allow other people's inability to understand your dream affect your gumption and your like readiness and your inspiration to make it reality.
Welcome to the Craft Beer Travel and Adventure Podcast with Living a Stout Life. This is where we sit down with creative thinkers, on the road adventurers, and craft beer lovers. Your hosts, Ken and April, live, work, and travel in a 24-foot RV in search of inspiring stories around a great beer. Okay, I've got to start this one with a thought. Because, let me tell you, if you've ever had a dream that really doesn't fit the typical dream, this is the episode to listen to. And so while we do actually try to inspire you on every one of our episodes on the podcast, I think, whether it's talking about beer. So. Yeah, I mean, whether it's talking about beer or travel or...
I hope so, anyway.
Whatever, that's our goal. Yeah, is to inspire you to, like, get out there and live a life you want and follow your passions. But this one, I'm telling you, in what? Around 30 minutes, I think, good or bad, in around 30 minutes, you'll be inspired to kind of maybe ditch everything you thought you kind of wanted, or ditch everything and follow everything you've always wanted. Because Cooper, yeah, the guy we're talking to, and the rest of his band just have that vibe, and they follow through on their dreams, and they don't let anybody, like, ruin their gumption or desire to do so.
And, you know, it's not that often that we talk to, like, people who start a band or in a band or whatever. Not that we don't want to, but it's got to fit, right? It's got to be right. And
well,
this
adventure
just fit. I mean, it's travel, it's adventure. And I will say Cooper does like a good beer, because there was a Mulahay Brewing was right there at their show.
We gave him a good beer too.
Yeah, and we gave him some other good beer. Yeah. So.
But
this was a fun one for me, because this was not planned at all ahead of time. So you're actually going to hear this was recorded just off our iPhones, sitting on the beach in Baja.
We spent a couple
months in Baja traveling around, and Soil Fire Project played at a couple different places that we happened to be at when they were there too. And you'll find out why and how through the podcast, because they're also... very legitimately, you could call them travelers, gypsies, as much as you could musicians. So that's the whole story. But, you know, we just sat down on the... We're like, you know, this was so great. This is so fun. And learning more about the band and the people that are in the band and what they're doing.
Their mission and the project. Mission,
yeah, it is the Soul Fire Project. It's not just a band. It's bigger than that. You'll hear why we say that in the podcast. But so we said, hey, Cooper, this is freaking cool, man. Can we sit down and talk? And so he's like, hell yeah. And we all just went over and sat down on the beach and got the iPhone out and recorded right there on the beach with the water lapping up on the shore. And I don't remember, probably some people walking by and boats coming up as we're sitting there talking. And it was really fun for me. And I think one of the funnest parts for me, though, was your dad was with us. April's dad, Jack, was with us. He traveled with us in Baja for around a month or so. And he got to see the Soul Fire Project a couple of different times. And he loved them, too. He's a musician as well. And he really fell in love with the different Latin styles of music that Soul Fire Project does.
And
he really liked hanging out with Cooper, and he talked with Cooper a lot.
And the instruments too, different instruments that were there. Yeah. There were a few different instruments too.
Yeah, it's, I guess the amazement is just good humans being attracted to other good humans, having fun and enjoying life and their passions.
And so, yeah, we wanted to actually talk to Cooper more about how him and the band and how they all got there. And because this bus that they have too, let him tell you about the bus, but it's an old converted school bus, and it is highly recognizable, and it is beautiful right alongside their music. So it was just super
I think we got to give people the hook, though. It's like this bus runs off of regular fuel and biofuels that...
He talks a lot about that.
It gets a lot more interesting to that when you hear that about it in the podcast. But I just wanted to give you like something concrete to be like, huh, that's kind of interesting.
Oh, what's going to draw them in is the biofuels and not
the biofuels and not the interesting people from all over the world who are in this band.
And the music and the passion.
The music, the passion.
I think
for the music and for life, honestly, a lot of things. There's just a lot of inspiration out of this one.
Like I said, you'll be inspired to ditch everything and follow everything you've always wanted to do because he just has that vibe.
We probably should bring it back in and sit down on the beach with Cooper.
He's got his guitar and a full tank of gas, and we're going to go from there.
I'm going to say, like, this is going to be, like, really open and honest and raw because we're, like, literally on the beach after a show.
Oh, yeah. Why not? and you got to be wired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because to start and we're
talking. We're talking to Cooper of the Soulfire Project, who is, let's see, I don't know, how would you define your role in Soulfire Project? I don't know. I don't want to call you lead singer because I don't think that's quite right.
Right, yeah.
Because you guys all have many roles.
I would say, like, the general sort of role that I always have held is, like, the instigator, I guess.
Ringleader? You know?
Yeah, kind of. As far as all of our tunes go, all of our original songs, I'm the songwriter of all the original stuff that we play. And so musically, songwriter and you know, vocalist, guitarist, and percussionist sometimes. And then as far as the sort of more like sustainable focused side of the project, mechanic, like, you know, what's that word? Like aspiring engineer of sorts with, you know, like I converted the engine to run on vegetable oil and figured all that out and set up the filtering system for the vegetable oil and, you know, set up our solar power system on the bus so that we, you know, didn't have to plug
in. Okay, so before we get too far.
No, okay, go ahead.
Soulfire Project is a band.
Yeah.
Made up of several individuals from several countries around the world.
Right.
But you have been traveling...
In that same bus?
In a converted school bus.
Yes.
For 14 years now, right now, as we speak. And you converted the bus to run on vegetable oil.
Yes.
And you also power everything electrical, primarily through solar power.
Yes.
So it's all like...
So this is a big project that is more than a band.
Yes. But do you run it, like, is it all on vegetable oil? Is there any gasoline?
We use... It's a diesel engine. And so we start it. There are two ways to do it. To run a diesel engine on vegetable oil, you can either do a one tank system where you filter if you're using used vegetable oil, you filter it and then you mix it with the diesel in the same tank, which is a really good style if you're a commuter, like if you in a vehicle that you commute with. But we knew from the beginning that this was going to be more like long journeys and staying in places for a little, you know, amounts of time. And so we decided to do a two-tank system where you start it on diesel and then you switch to vegetable oil when the engine's hot, and we run on vegetable oil the majority of the trip and then switch back to diesel before we turn it off so that the fuel lines don't, end up with veg cooling down and not being able to flow into the injectors and all of that.
How did you come about the knowledge of this?
I grew up in Oregon, and the West Coast in general, I'd say, has been like, I don't know, probably, I really don't know, but I had heard about it in like 2006 or 2005, I'd say, about people using these old Mercedes, the like 240Ds, those old school Mercedes, and converting them to run on vegetable oil. And when me and my bro, Pshemek, decided to do this project and, you know, scrounged up the dough to buy the bus, that came into our sort of realm of, you know, questions and whether or not it was a possibility and how to do it. And then, so we just got really inspired. And we both were pretty, mechanically inclined
And so we just started to research, you know, the ways to do it.
Something happened to our dinghy. It's way out there.
You can walk out there.
It's called the tide came in a little bit.
No, don't take our phone. Okay, we have to watch these guys walk out to their team. Like, we are on the beach in Baja.
Hey, it's Baja. All things are possible in Baja.
It's way out.
There's quite a few dinghies that are a little farther out than I think people left them.
Exactly. By the way, wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that was so good.
Of course, of course.
Great. Yeah, we made it. It's an inspiration. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah. Thank you.
What are you doing, Ray?
No, there's rocks.
He's going to swim.
He's
going for it.
No, your phone's not in your pocket.
No, I haven't.
It's okay. A lot of the new ones are waterproof to like 7 meters.
So I have to say, we were recording a podcast in Yakima, Washington.
Yeah.
And we were in the rig behind this brewery that like let us stay in there. And we were like, and then we all of a sudden we get this knock on the door.
Uh-huh.
We're like, the two of us were like, we were told we could stay here. Why is somebody knocking on our door? Uh-huh. And so somebody knocks on the door. And we open it. He's the bartender.
One of the beer tenders from the brewery.
And he was like, "I just have a beer release. It's going to be released tomorrow, and I wanted to see if you would like the beer."
Yeah, he was like, "I know you guys were like hanging out, and like I knew you were staying here, so like I wanted to share this with you."
So that interruption was like, "Well, do you want to come in and share the beer with us?"
Uh huh.
And it was a great interruption.
Nice.
So interruptions like happen all the time, and it's just beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So
now we have people like get into their dinghies.
Oh,
I love
here
it.
Here we go. Gotta go over to Sound Aspect now.
You were talking about vegetable oil.
Right.
Gas, diesel.
Yeah, yeah.
Good luck getting back to that.
No way.
That's okay, because this is like, going to be about a lot more than vegetable
oil. It is, but the knowledge that you have from that, I would never even... I don't even know how my brain could wrap that around. Yeah. Like, I just... Yeah.
Walk on, yeah, I mean, it's just... Yeah. I mean, there's some... Simple. The diesel engine was originally designed by Rudolf Diesel, a German dude who built his first functioning prototype of a diesel engine running on peanut oil, not on petroleum. And so that's his idea. That was his idea from the get-go, is that people, you know, could have access to a more sustainable fuel than something like petroleum. And so. Yeah, it was just, you know, there's some things that you have to do to make that work. One of them is if you're going to be using used vegetable oil, you have to filter it. And the other thing is you have to heat it up before it gets to the injectors of the engine so that it goes in less viscous. And the spray pattern, when it goes out of the injector, it can be, you know, combusted. It can combust in an efficient way.
Where did this whole idea come from?
The whole project, though, because the project...
Honestly,
we've seen you primarily as a musical band.
Right.
Is that the project? I mean, what is the Soulfire project in your guys' view?
Yeah, so like basically in the beginning, it was really just like born of the dream to be able to travel on, you know, in a mobile home of some sort with a bunch of artists. You know, travel throughout Latin America with a bunch of artists living off of our art. Many of us, the original crew that we formed when we left the States, were musicians, which has always been a passion of mine. And so music was a heavy sort of, you know, part of that. But we also were traveling with a few, when we left, with a few fire spinners, like dancers.
Fire dancers.
And so anyways, that was sort of the beginning inklings of the, you know, the dream. But then once we converted the bus to run on vegetable oil, and once we were successful with that, it was like, it was a bit of an eye opener for us about the importance of living in a more sustainable way and not just, you know, the being conscious of the fuel that we're using to get around, but also, you know, the kind of food that we're eating, the way that we're managing our waste, you know, in all the senses, from like, you know, dry toilets, composting toilets, to like, what do you do with your plastic trash, and, you know, what do you do with your organic material, you know, from the kitchen and all of those things. So like little by little, we started to go like, okay, it's important, like it's important for us, you know, as like responsible human beings to live in the most sustainable way that we can. And now we're doing this nomadically on this bus. And so the vegetable oil conversion was the first sort of like inspiring factor in that sort of like trajectory, you know? And then we started going, okay, learning things on the road, meeting people who, you know, were working at sustainable farms or things like that, and showing us these different techniques of, for example, bottle bricking, which is like where you stuff your plastic trash, clean plastic trash, into a bottle and pack it in as tight as you can, and then put the cap on it, and then the next bottle. And then you end up turning, like, you know, what would be garbage bags this big into like four bottle bricks that you can then use to build a wall or a bench, or, you know, you can use them like as a, you know, as a mass
kind of
material.
Upcycle.
Exactly, yeah.
Upcycling, basically.
Yeah. Same thing with, like, you know, our, you know, compost and dry toilets, you know, or composting toilets, like, you know, typically, like, so we got really inspired. What I'm getting at is that we got really inspired at one point to like make all of the systems and all of the ways that we could possibly live sustainably in the bus happen. And so we got really deep into that, and that was like sort of the birth of the like full spectrum Soulfire project, which was like, okay, art, mainly music, but also sort of like dabblings in dance and in different kind of, you know, theatrical presentations and things like that, on the road, in venues, on the street, you know, anywhere we could, you know, to make the money necessary to live, eat, and move the bus and all that, right? And then the other side of the sort of branch, I would say, you know, the artistic, musical side of the project, and then the sustainable side of the project started to become, like, you know, an interest in going into schools and teaching people these, you know, techniques of bottle bricking and of composting toilets and of, you know, alternative building and of, you know, how to convert an engine to run on vegetable oil and all of this. And so we did that, and we were like pretty focused on the whole, like, you know, the whole spectrum of the project, the sustainable side and the artistic side, for many years. And then it got to a point where we were like, if we really want to move forward with the music, we have to, like, there's a saying in Spanish where it's like abarcar menos, apretar más, which is like, you know, to embrace less and tighten more. So like, you know, don't do too many things or take too many things on, because you can't do them all well if you are doing so many things at the same time. And so that was like kind of a, you know.
So in English, I would say like niche down.
Uh-huh.
Tighten your niche.
Yes, exactly.
Get a little more focus.
Right. And so that was where we were
like,
because
you can't do everything great.
Right.
And you want to do some things really great.
Yeah, exactly. Like the music. And that was like, okay, the point where we were like, all right, we need to, you know, yeah, niche down and focus on the musical side of the project, and, you know, get these songs that we've been playing for so many years together and record them, and, you know, record a new album. And, you know, and then like focus on touring more and making sure, you know, that we were with the, you know, apt musicians to be able to really take the music to the next level. And so since then, we've kind of like, you know, not left it behind. We still live, the way we live in the bus is still, it's still running on vegetable oil. We're still, you know, separating all of our waste, you know, our organic waste, always trying to put it in a place where it can, you know, decompose properly and go back to the earth. You know, the plastic trash, packing them as much as we can into bottles to make bottle bricks to then build something ourselves or donate them to a farm that wants to use them to build. So like, yeah. So we're still, you know, like functioning on the sustainable sort of focus inside of the project, you know, as far as our internal sort of community is concerned. But we're just less focused over these last few years on like going out and doing workshops or classes on these things, and instead focused more of that energy on pushing the music forward and writing new songs and, you know, rehearsing with the band and getting, you know, on to play bigger stages.
How would you describe your guys' music as Soulfire Project?
So like, for like,
for somebody who's more never heard music minded
people, I would say mestizo world fusion is the thing. But but as far as like more like sort of you know, like just sort of layman's terms or whatever, if you want to say, cumbia, reggae, Afro Latin. You know, we like, we play other styles. There's some like gypsy stuff involved. There's some punk. There's some, you know, funk, whatever. Mm-hmm. But like the main sort of inspiring styles for us are mainly cumbia, reggae, and Afro Latin stuff. You know, like that. Okay. We want to, you know, embrace the most like inspiring musical styles that we've come into contact with on our journeys, but, you know, be able to grab from all of these awesome musical styles that are, you know, that exist all over the world. And, you know, if they're inspiring to us and we feel that we can reproduce them or involve them in some way respectfully and with some level of like understanding of the, you know, the specific rhythm or the specific, you know, harmonic style or whatever it is, involve that in our original music or cover songs that are in those styles. And always obviously paying homage and respect to the people who, you know, have pioneered those songs or those musical styles.
And who would you like to give a shout out to, like with all your artists and stuff?
Oh man, Terracotta is an awesome band that we love a lot and have been heavily inspired by. Muerdo is an amazing singer and songwriter from Spain who we've been heavily inspired by as well. And we actually got the opportunity when we were in Colombia to jam with him and do a little like kind of impromptu concert. That was a really cool experience. He's awesome. Natalia Lafourcade is an amazing Mexican singer-songwriter who's just like, I don't know. I mean, definitely different style in general, but her lyricism and her writing is like very, very inspiring. Manu, our bassist, he also plays guitar and has changed instruments with Soulfire over the years. He had originally started off as our drummer. And he's just a multi-instrumentalist that's like very, very talented and very, very, you know, strong-willed. And he's been with the band like for 13 years, you know, and we've been on the road for 14.
So are all the people that are in the band now, like, have they all been in the band?
No. So,
and
like,
are you the one who, like, started this whole thing?
Yeah, okay. I bought the bus with my best friend, Chemek,
okay,
and built it out, and then, and we left Oregon in 2009, end of 2009, and crossed into Mexico January 1st, 2010. Okay. And, all of those members, original members, left. And then I met Manu. We were in San Cristobal de las Casas in Chiapas.
Chiapas.
And very south Mexico, right next to Guatemala. And I met Manu there. And aside from his musical abilities, he's also a truck driver and like has been driving trucks since he was 14, so it was very easy for him to drive the bus, which is not everyone is capable or
if you've ever driven the roads in Mexico, especially Baja, like it's not for everybody.
Right, for sure.
It's can be challenging, especially in a bigger vehicle.
Yeah.
Like a bus or an RV
or something. 37 foot bus like definitely changes that.
More visitors.
Oh, right on. Thanks for coming. So that was, I would say he's definitely like my rock, you know, like most solid person of reference and, you know, confidence and, you know, just like definitely like rely on him.
How did you embark on this personally? Because I gather from all of this, you're kind of the spearhead behind it.
Right, yeah.
Like you're the originator of the
Soulfire project. Yeah. So like long story short, I guess my mom's always been like very open-minded and very like, you know, pushing me to like go explore and, you know, open my mind to the greater, you know, sort of, you know, cultures.
So your mom was a 60s
like
hippie.
Yeah. She's awesome. She's awesome. And,
I say that in a good way. I say that in a very good way.
So when I graduated high school, she had the idea to buy me a ticket to go travel around Europe for 2 months before going back to college, which I never ended up doing because I was so inspired traveling around Europe with Chemek, my friend that I ended up building the bus with. I was so inspired by meeting all of these artists and you know, you know, artisans, you know, doing handicrafts and street performances, fire spinning, juggling, theater, clowning, music a lot, you know, drum circle, like, you know, African drum ensemble things, you know. And there was a point where I was in Europe and just being heavily inspired by that. And also I was playing my guitar a lot at that point and starting to learn songs and singing them on the street. And people, I ended up earning money. Like people, like I didn't even put down a hat, but someone came and put down a cup because they were like, you should be earning tips. And people just started putting tips in. And I was like, wow, this is actually like something that I'm making money doing, which is great. To be able to like live off mm-hmm. of something that I'm passionate about, you know? And then, so that was sort of that was the beginning of it. And then I ended up staying in Europe, not coming back to go to university, and just, traveled around, was playing a lot on the streets and, met a lot of other awesome, inspiring people and realized that I could live off of my music, you know, depending on how I managed my money and where I decided to live and all those kinds of things,
right.
That I could live off my music. And so, I was heavily inspired by that and ended up staying in Europe and then ended up going to Morocco. But on that trip for, instead of 2 months, it ended up being 11 months. And then when I came back to the States, I was like, this is, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be in university. I want to continue traveling, blah, blah, blah. And I ended up, I had a 69 Volkswagen bus and I was driving. I went down to my dad's house in California and ended up, I had a problem with the engine, which was just a rookie mistake, realistically just a rookie mistake of mine. When I pulled over on the side of the road, checked the engine oil immediately, and it was marked low. And so I added engine oil, but I didn't wait for all the engine oil to drain down to the pan.
Right.
So it was actually overfilled. And then so it started popping and all kinds of
all the fun stuff
noises.
That you learn as a kid.
Yeah. And then so anyways, I took my van back to my dad's house, ended up taking it in his garage, took the whole engine out, took it all apart, all the way down to the block, and, you know, saw that nothing was damaged internally, put it all back together. And then like a few days later, like at most, received an email from a activist group that I had like signed up for their mailing list that Fidel was going to resign and that Raul Castro was going to take power in Cuba. And I was like, I have to get to Cuba before that changes because it's gonna change the whole thing. The whole, like, you know, culture, they're going to open the embargo and it's going to become Americanized and touristy, and I want to see that before it changes. And I was like, Dad, I'm going to Cuba. I'm driving my bus down to Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico, and I'm going to go find a sailboat to Cuba. He's like, you're crazy, but that's okay. Right on. Go for it.
Nice.
I agree with your dad, but cool.
And so I left and went south and ended up getting my wallet stolen. So I had some savings in my bank account, but I got my wallet stolen in Mazatlan. At a gas station, so then I didn't have my license or my bank card, so I didn't have access to any of my funds.
Oh, jeez.
And but I had my guitar and I had a full tank of gas. And so with that full tank of gas, I arrived to Puerto Vallarta, played my guitar on the streets 4 nights on the Malecón to save up for another tank of gas, with which I got to Jalisco, to Barra de Navidad, where a friend of mine that I met in California was living at that time. And I left my van there and ended up continuing that trip, which was like a 5 month, 6 month journey in Mexico, just, you know, by hitchhiking and with my backpack and my guitar, and got all the way down to Mexico, down to Chiapas. And then I got an email from my friend Chemek that I grew up with and had traveled around Europe with after high school. And he was like, I'm done with university. I'm up to here with this bullshit. I'm going to go travel. Where are you? What are you doing?
Hey, Kenny.
Hey, what?
I have a question for you. If you like mountain biking, photography, hiking, craft beer, community, campfires, exploring, friends.
I like all these things.
Well, do you know what you should do when you like all those things?
What?
Go to Camp Carpe Diem. It's an adult camp for travelers. It's centered around community, connections, mountain biking, craft beer, photography, hiking, and just enjoying the local culture. It's all of that. And this year, it is in Hot Springs, Arkansas, May 16th through the 20th. It's going to be a blast. Tickets are available and use STOUTFRIENDS10 for $10 off. That's STOUTFRIENZ10. And you can get tickets at CAMPCARPEDIEM.com. We'd love to have you.
I was like, I'm down in the jungle in Chiapas, and I have this idea. We got to find a bus and, you know, convert it to be like a mobile home and then go travel on it with a bunch of musicians. He's like, that sounds great, but like, I'm ready to get out of here now. I was like, okay, I'll figure out a way to get back, but if you're down to do this, like, we got to make this happen. He's like, all right, yeah, but come back now. And so I ended up going back, and that was the beginning of the thing. And at that point, after the journey in Europe and the journey in Mexico, meeting all kinds of, you know, street musicians and artisans and all that kind of stuff, I was like pretty clear about the, you know, objective of traveling around in a mobile home with a bunch of artists and living off of our art while we travel through Latin America and possibly get to Brazil. That was sort of like the main objective and dream, you know. And then as we started to get into it, you know, and then leave the States and get into Mexico and meet all kinds of people and get inspired, you know, a lot of things started to change for the better, you know. We learned a lot of new things, and yeah, and then so that was 14 years ago. And
wow.
So we ended up, you know, spending many years in Mexico, 3, I think, at the beginning, and then another like 3 or 4 years between Guatemala and Panama, up and down, up and down, up and down, doing a bunch of, you know, tours through all of Central America. And then eventually mustered up the sort of gumption to get, you know, funds together and plan to go over to Colombia and continue the journey through South America. And so we did that, and then we were in Colombia from 2017 to 2019, and then we finished the tour in 2019. Everyone went home, then the pandemic hit. Then, just finally, what was it, last December, not this last December, the one before, 2022, got an awesome friend that I met at Burning Man, was like the kind of spearhead of like, you have to go get the bus and you have to go travel on the bus again. What's going on with it there in Colombia? I was like, yeah, I know, but it's difficult and it's expensive, and the only place we could really import it possibly is
still in
Colombia. Yeah. And so turns out he's like some banker turned, you know, hippie, and not hippie. He's awesome. He's a really awesome guy.
Burning Man.
Yeah. And
he's a Burning Man.
But he was like, let's figure this out. I have friends that can definitely donate to your cause. And so we ended up raising all the money necessary to go do the tour with all of the musicians and a filmmaker. And we brought the bus from South Colombia up to the north to Cartagena and put it on a ship and shipped it to Veracruz and then brought it into Mexico. And then that was like March so of last year.
Is there a Soul Fire Project movie out somewhere?
No. We've done a lot of short films and stuff.
Okay, you've done some short documentaries.
Uh-huh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. And so those are on our YouTube channel, but okay. There's no movie.
And
yet.
where did the name Soulfire Project come from? Where's that inspiration? An
Amadou and Mariam song. Amadou and Mariam, they're a really awesome band duo. Blind, both of them, couple, from Mali, and they have a song, I think it's called La Realité, or something like that, I think that's what it's called, and there's one point in the song where it's like, soul fire, and in Spain, when we were traveling around when I was 18, I met this crazy German dude, Willie, who ended up, like, burning me 4 or 5 CDs before I left his house. To travel south.
I need to share with you this mixtape.
Yeah. And he shared me all these like 5 CDs, and I was just listening through them, and that was one of them, Amadou and Mariam. So that was like, awesome. It stuck in my head. And yeah, that was
cool. Got my perfect guitar and a full tank of gas.
Yeah.
Title
I think there's
episode.
A song there, too.
There's a song there.
That's how do brilliant. Like, you are super fluent in Spanish and English. Did you pick that up just along the way, or in your travels, or you just learned as you went, or how
when
did
I was
you...
in Spain, that extended trip that was planned to only be 2 months, and I ended up staying. I was working on some organic farms, and one of them in the south of Spain in Tarifa, there was a couple, a Bolivian couple living there and working there called Carlos and Liliana, and they
I ended up as like the only other woofer on the farm working with them every day, and they didn't speak any English. And so like, okay, that's where I started to learn, you know, the basics, you know, starting to apply those things that I had learned in high school, and had my dictionary on hand all the time, and anything they were saying I would look up and figure out, you know. And then just started, honestly, just like, you know, applying the little Spanish that I knew in situations where I was like actually physically doing something or interacting, you know. And that was the real like crux point for me of like being able to learn fluent, you know, to speak fluently. And so I learned a little bit there, and then ended up going down to, when I went to came down to Mexico, I was traveling alone for 5 months, and so I was like, you know, everywhere.
It's kind of necessity, right? You just have to like, you have to figure it out.
Yeah.
So to all the young people out there in this crazy mixed up world, because it really just is, and it's always honestly been a crazy mixed up world. Like, it's just always been this like clash of like, what should I do? What does society tell me what I should do? Like, do you have any kind of advice for anybody who's like out there trying to figure it out?
Don't listen to sad people.
Yeah.
Don't take advice from sad people.
Okay.
I like that.
Yeah.
And follow your heart, you know? Like, if you have a, you know, an inspiration or some dream to do something, like, try, and you will succeed. Eventually, you will succeed. And, like, you know, you can't, like, allow other people's inability to understand your dream affect your gumption and your like readiness and your inspiration to make it reality. You know, that's like a big, and also don't allow other people to tell you what you think, what like to convince you that you should do something that you feel is not what you really want to do. You know, I mean, like, I remember being in high school in classes, like whatever. Yeah. Tag talented and gifted, you know, kids that were like, and putting me in accelerated, whatever, math and chemistry. And I remember being in chemistry class and like balancing ionic equations, and I'm just like, this is stupid. Like, I have no interest in this at all. None at all. Like, why am I spending hours of my life every day learning this shit? It's like, does not inspire me. I have no interest in it.
Because you're smart.
Well,
okay.
I mean,
smart. No, great. Just because you're smart, no, yeah, they tell
but
you
great.
To do that.
But well, maybe right, that's not where your brain should be.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, like, that's my point.
Not
is
what
that, like,
you want.
Don't feel like you have, like, you know, that's a problem of the system, is that they, you know, there's a quote by, I forget, I think his name was like Elwood Hubberly or something like that. He was like a dean of education at Stanford, like in way, 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 like early 1900 or something like that. The beginnings of Stanford or something like that. And this guy was, quoted saying publicly that our schools are factories in which children are pumped out like nails, and the specifications shall be given by government and industry, right? And so this is like, you know, top ranking, like leader of one of the most prestigious universities in the US, who a lot of other universities are obviously like gleaning, you know, points and understanding and knowledge and ways of managing themselves off of. And that's what he said. So it's like, we have to understand that, like, you know, the system behind the school is not interested in our freedom or our genuine inspiration or our genuine growth. It is interested in turning us into cogs in a machine that make the, you know, the capitalist war machine, you know, march forth. And that's my perspective, but there's a lot of proof that that's sort of, you know, the direction that it's focused. And so I think the most important thing is just, like, you know, think critically, follow your heart, and yeah, don't take advice from sad people.
Thank you.
I like love that.
Where do people find you?
Spotify and YouTube, Soulfire Project on Spotify and YouTube, and then Facebook and Instagram, same thing. Soulfire Project. Yes.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Okay, so I know when we were actually talking to Cooper that I told him thank you, and we both told him thank you for taking time out of his, like, moment of, like, just finishing a whole concert, basically, on the beach.
Yeah, so, this was just minutes after they finished the show.
So I just wanted to give like an extra shout out to Cooper for taking the time to hang out with us on the beach, because that was like, seriously, I don't even have the words for it. Yeah, especially listening back on it, and you're hearing the waves lapping and stuff, and just remembering how it was. And also just a big shout out to like Cooper's bandmates and stuff for, you know, you guys, we stole them for a little bit. So
we did, because they're very much more than just bandmates. They're like a family, and they waited while we did the podcast. They waited back for a little bit, and because the band gets together and has a meal after the show together as a family, as a band. And so they waited. Well, very graciously waited for us to talk to Cooper while he was all wired up from the show.
Yeah, so it was cool to see them all come back together at the end, and like they were all hanging out and eating a meal together as we were packing up our stuff and heading out. And
yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, so Baja does not disappoint. Baja Concepcion did not disappoint. Let's see, it was at the Donkey Restaurant, did not disappoint.
Soulfire Project did not disappoint at all.
I keep wanting to say that Soulfire Project, it will set your soul on fire. And however you want to take that is completely up to you.
That's a good one. That's good.
Yeah. So if you got your guitar and a full tank of gas, I think you're good. Get out there and, you know, follow that dream. Don't let anybody tell you anything differently. Before we go, though, Cooper had mentioned this quote from, he was like a dean of Stanford.
Yeah,
is that what it was?
He was a professor at Stanford University.
In like early 1900s?
Yeah. I'd say right around the turn of the century, I think. His name was Elwood P. Cubberly.
Okay, anyhow. But the quote...
Elwood Cubberly.
There's a reason we want to say this. So the quote that he had said was... Professor Cubberly had said
was... Well, because Cubberly was a... He was kind of a, I think, a proponent of... Or at least... saw that schools were a means to produce the kind of individuals that society needs for a society like America to succeed.
Like a factory kind of
production. Yeah, basically a factory for society.
So he said.
And he said, our schools are, in a sense, factories in which the raw products, children, are to be shaped and fashioned into products to meet the various demands of life.
We have another quote.
Oh, that sounds exciting.
Boring. We have another quote to kind of counteract that one and to go off of with Cooper kind of got his.
Yeah, I think it sums up Cooper more than counteracting.
True.
But I think Cooper basically did with the way he decided to live his life once he left school.
Ooh, but the quote is coming from an author. And when was this author around?
Probably even before that.
Yeah,
right?
See? So, dude, this guy knows his shit. So this is a quote.
Never let formal education get in the way of your learning. And that is the very famous Mark Twain. And I think that is a quote that, whether he knows the quote or not, I'm pretty sure that Cooper has embodied that quote.
Yeah.
Because he has not let formal education get in the way of his learning.
And he's doing quite nicely.
Life is teaching him well.
Yeah. All right. Cheers to following your dreams.
Cheers. Talk to y'all later. Okay.
We'd love to hear from you, so keep the conversation going. Send us a note, share a beer recommendation or two, or just say hey. This Stout Conversation has been brought to you by livingastoutlife.com, where you can find community and resources for all your craft beer travel and adventure lifestyle needs. Gaitero hasta después de muerte.